I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Touchdown, Buffalo! And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve!
A balloon.
Steve! A blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here.
It is a Tuesday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as our MSG viewers take a quick look at what looked like some cloudy skies over the Bills Stadium today.
Man, I walked outside 10 minutes ago and it was like a spot. It was like a hot spotlight out there.
Yeah.
It was so sunny.
Now it is sunny. We know that there's supposed to be some rain moving in tonight, and then it'll be cooler for the players out on the practice field because it's been humid the last couple of days, at least by Buffalo standards. But welcome to the show. Glad you're with us. Got an interesting show today. The college football saga continues. We will get into that as it looks like some major conferences will be making some decisions today, most notably the Big Ten, which had already been reported yesterday that they are going to postpone, at the very least, the fall college football season along with the rest of their sports. It looks like the Pac-12 might be part of a package deal with the Big Ten, and if that happens, those are two giant dominoes, and the others inevitably may just fall after that.
Yeah, we were talking before we came on, and the thing that's coming out now is certainly it's, I mean, yeah, there's all the economics of it that is different for each school, but it's also, and what you and I were talking about, the health concerns, and not only health concerns, these are young, strapping kids and all that, but now you've got kids that, you know, may be compromised because of some sort of congenital heart thing or long-term effects. They've got kids now that are having long-term effects from having COVID virus, and there's a chance that, you know, an outside chance, obviously, of somebody succumbing to the disease right on the practice field kind of thing because of their heart complications or something that may or may not be detected already. And what university is going to be – and if it, even if it is a 1 in 1,000 chance, or even if it's a 1 in 10,000 chance, that puts it at double, you know, that puts you at 10, 12 deaths because of it over the course of a college football season across the country. You don't want to roll those dice if you're a college administrator or an athletic director. You know, you're that's curtains for you.
Right. And really at the crux of this is this heart condition that an Indiana football player has already come down with as a result of contracting COVID, and it's essentially called myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle. It's been found in at least five Big Ten conference athletes and several others in other conferences, and just a very comprehensive write-up if you want to learn more about this on ESPN.com on their college football page. It's by Paula Levine and Mark Schlebeck, and these two journalists went through a countless number of sources, medical sources, to try to vet this story out as best they can. It is very comprehensive. I think the thing I printed out, it runs about 6-7 pages, and it really sheds some light on what these conference presidents and school presidents are dealing with in terms of the decision-making. This has them on edge, and understandably so, because this is where you're hoping that the science and the data can give you enough information to make a good decision. the initial reports back on this are not good. I think in time they would get a better handle on the gravity of this kind of condition as a result of contracting COVID. But they've got to make a decision now with not nearly enough data to make them comfortable. And so they may choose to err on the side of caution, and that may very well mean no college football this fall.
And of course, like every other topic, you know, you go on social media, there's extremes on both ends of it. And I get this too. You hear from a lot of college coaches, Nick Saban and also the guy, Dabo Sweeney. And not for nothing, and you can say what you want about college coaches. For the most part, the guy, and I can't even think of his name, the guy at Penn State, and Dabo Sweeney and these guys, listen, they like their players. They love their kids. They recruit them, and they treat them like family. And for whatever you say about Nick Saban and his persona on the field, the guy runs a program where they get the most out of their players, and they like these guys. They feel responsible for them. And they feel – I can see it because I know, even Dennis Green, my college coach, would have thought this as well. They're safer with me.
Right.
Because he's seen some of, and not all of them. I get it. There's 100 kids, 120 kids on your roster, but there's a large number of those kids that are better off inside his building, and coaches feel that way. And not for nothing, but whether they're right or wrong, that's how they feel, and because they know too that they've got medical staff and they'll take care of them if they get a chance to do that. If they don't let those kids in their building, they can't watch over them. They feel it's level of responsibility to these kids. And you can be as cynical as you want, like, yeah, you know, Nick Saban making umpteen million dollars a year. I'm sure he wishes he does. As cynical as you want to be about it, these college coaches have personal relationships and they invest themselves into their kids. And they really believe, by and large, that those kids are safer with them than they are going out into whatever dire circumstance they recruited them out of in whatever high school, in whatever state you want to name. They've seen some horrific environments that they recruit these kids out of to bring them to their schools to play football.
Right. Where they're getting three square meals a day.
Right. You
which
can't
doesn't happen at their home sometimes.
You can't convince these coaches that those kids aren't better off with them in their building. And that's an issue. It's a real thing. And for some of these kids, maybe a large percentage of them, certainly not 100%, but a large percentage of them, it's probably true.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard to make this sweeping policy statement,
right,
cover every base and say it's better for this kid, but over here you got three kids where it's not better then.
Right. And again, you're going back to what the data from the virus and its lingering effects are, and you're weighing that against those kinds of circumstances, too. And in this article on ESPN.com, they say the concern has made the bar higher for returning to fall sports. This is according to Dr. Jonathan Dresner, director of the University of Washington Medicine Center for Sports Cardiology. He's also a sports medicine physician who advises the NCAA on cardiac issues. He said, so it's made the bar higher, and it could be we don't get there. We don't get to the bar where we can say, yeah, we're good to play football. And we saw the Mid-American Conference already cancel their fall sports, including football, over the weekend, and it was due in part to receiving these medical reports about myocarditis. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. They got medical reports on myocarditis as a lingering effect of COVID contraction and other problems associated with coronavirus. And they're like, what we don't, and here's a direct quote from the Northern Illinois Athletic Director, Sean Frazier, who was in the Mid-American Conference. He says, quote, what we don't know was really haunting us, and that's why we came to our final decision. That's part of the data that our presidents used. This mom of the Indiana freshman football player who has myocarditis and is still dealing with issues right now and is in no way, shape, or form ready to get back on a field and be an athlete. He said that the mom gave us a play-by-play, and the stuff is extremely scary. And it's these conference presidents are woke now. Now it's real.
And it is real because there's no way they can escape liability.
Right.
The university, the football program, the college itself, the president, everybody, they're all liable because they're holding this. They're responsible for that kid's well-being when
because I've done it. You haven't done it yet, or maybe you have. Sent your kids to college, right?
She's not going. She's got to do online at home.
I have five that went through college, and there's no question. You're giving them to the college.
Yeah.
That's there. You know, you're saying, okay, he's there, and he's living there. She's living there. The first time away from home, they better be okay on your campus.
Yeah.
And if something like this comes up,
you would have huge problems. Huge problems. The university and personally.
So there are a lot of conferences a couple of conferences that are meeting today. The Big Ten meets today. I believe the Pac-12 also meets today. There might be one or two other conferences of the Power Five that are meeting today. And there could very well be decisions that come down while we're still on the air here on One Bills Live up until 3 o'clock. So if those updates or there's breaking news on the college football front, we'll be sure to bring it to you right here on the program. We're also going to be joined later in the show by two members of the Bills rookie class, fourth round pick Gabe Davis and seventh round pick Dane Jackson. They will join us at the same time. Socially distant, of course, on two different iPads, which will be interesting. But, hey, by hook or by crook, we're getting people on this show. So our crack staff on the other side in the control room will put that all together and make it sing for us. And Steve and I will hopefully ask some good questions. Right. But there's a unique link between Gabe Davis and Dane Jackson that we wanted to shed some light on and share with you, the fans, that we think you'll find interesting. So we look forward to that conversation coming up at 1:30. And since we were going to have the rookies on, we thought we would also make that part of our Twitter poll today. And the question we're asking you at One Bills Live is, which Bills rookie could be the biggest surprise in 2020 and why? So tweet us up, hit us up. We'll get you on the tweet sheet and read your comments and your reasons why you think this, you know, draft choice, or who knows, even an undrafted guy might be a surprise on the roster. Steve, I think we all anticipate that A.J. Epenesa and Zach Moss, the top two draft choices, are going to be making contributions. I don't think I would put them in this poll. It's obvious to me that those two guys are going to get on the field a good deal.
Right.
So I would say it's everybody after them that's in this pool, and mm-hmm. those are the choices we gave people for the most part. It's Gabe Davis, Isaiah Hodgins, Tyler Bass, and then we listed other. Obviously, Dane Jackson could be in that other category, and, you know, with E.J. Gaines opting out this year, there's an extra room in the defensive back room, you would assume. But right now, the early returns are as follows. Tyler Bass in the lead, Steve.
I knew he would. I knew he was going to run away. I thought he'd run away with this.
38.6% of the vote. If he makes Davis close behind.
If he makes the team, he wins. First of all,
but that's a big if.
It would be a surprise if he made the team. But if he does, it's over. I mean, he's going to score points for this team.
Well, yeah,
he'll
be the leading scorer on the team, conceivably.
That would be a surprise, though. There's no question about it. Tyler Bass got a big job ahead of him, unseating a veteran like Stephen Hauschka, a proven veteran like Stephen Hauschka, and do it in a year where they're not going to have any games, preseason games to showcase.
Yeah.
That's big. So he will be a surprise, no question. Big, strong leg, no question about it. Got some gifts and bring something to the table, but is he ever going to get a chance to belly up to the table? That's the big question.
Well, right, and there are a lot of layers to that competition, including the ability to kick off. And Bass has Hauschka beat on that. Done deal, Lucille. So it's going to come down to demonstrating an ability to be clutch on place kicks. I think that's the key for Bass. And how you do that without preseason games,
I think makes it
a little tougher. So we'll see where that thing lands when all is said and done and, you know, final roster cuts are made.
Think about this.
And, Steve, with a 16-player practice squad, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Although, you know, you put him on a practice squad, somebody's going to scoop him up. I mean, Tyler
Bass.
You can make him one, you know, unless you want to make him one of your four protected. But even then, as Brandon Bean explained it to us on a Zoom call, you can protect four guys on your practice squad so they can't be poached by another team. But when you get to Monday after a game, there's a 48-hour window where everybody on your practice squad's eligible to be poached. And then you got to protect them again Tuesday, 4 p.m. for the next coming week. So there is a window where you can lose people on your practice squad no matter what, even with those protection things in place. So,
and I think you're going to get into a spot where teams are going to have to pick and choose which position groups are going to be protected that week. If you know what I mean, always want to protect a QB in case. You probably want to protect another skill player or probably offensive lineman or two for this year. And then, you know, maybe a kicker's the way to go. If you know all of a sudden you got nobody to kick field goals, that's big.
Right,
that's big.
Okay.
It's going to be a huge strategic thing every week. Who's going to be protected? Particularly if you have to do it on Wednesday or Tuesday or Wednesday.
Tuesday, 4 p.m. I mean, it's going to hinge on who got injured, who may have had to be put on the COVID reserve list. I mean, there are a whole bunch of scenarios and variables that are at work there in terms of those decisions that they have to make. So while it's great that you've got four extra players on your practice squad, you still have to go through the process of determining that every single week.
Yeah, and the gamesmanship is going to be huge because you got to look around and say, okay, who in my division is going to poach this guy?
Yeah.
And what happened to that guy and that guy and that guy? And you're going to worry about the guys in your conference and certainly the teams on your schedule first. Say, okay, who have they got? Okay, so say, for instance, in the next three games, let's say you get to October, and you got Vegas, Tennessee, Kansas City, New York. Those are four AFC teams. Tennessee lost three defensive linemen to COVID. Are you really going to leave unprotected,
a practice squad defensive lineman?
No way.
Yeah.
Right? And the same thing the next week, Kansas City and New York and then New England. I mean, you're going to look ahead and see what you got.
It's going to hinge as much on other teams' shortage of players at a position as much as it is on your own roster.
Right.
Based on reserve COVID and injuries.
If they do pick a kid up off the practice squad, they got to play him.
Well, and here's the other thing we have to remember too, Steve. The long waiting period to get the guy in the dang building. You know, Monday and Tuesday is the window where that practice squad poaching is open for everybody in the league. But let's just say, okay, Tuesday you get this guy off of the Giants practice squad. Okay, it doesn't matter if he's been testing negative with the Giants for weeks. He has to come, let's just say hypothetically, Buffalo.
Tuesday night or whatever.
Tuesday night, has to take a test. You get that test the next day, negative. Take another test. Then he's got to take a physical off-site, and then I think he's got to pass a third test. Then he can come in the building. You're talking Friday.
Friday.
Maybe. I mean, he may not even practice with you. If you got to put him on the field.
He'll be a walk-through on Saturday.
Saturday. And play Sunday. Right. I mean, that could be a scenario that comes up this year if some team's hit by COVID where they got to make a mad scramble.
What he'll do is they'll test him. Like, if they can get him in on a Tuesday night, they'll test him Tuesday night, Wednesday morning.
Physical, Wednesday night.
Yeah, I mean, they could get him in on Thursday.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how those tests have to be spread out.
I don't need 24 hours.
Two negatives in 24 hours. I have to check to see if a practice squad ad needs a third test, because that's how it was when they were all coming in.
It might depend on when
parts unknown.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if he has to take three to get fully clear. Because think about the players that are here. Like, where's this guy coming from? What's his story? Yeah. You know, you want three negatives.
It depends. If he comes in and was tested by that team on Monday, comes up negative on Tuesday, and he's in your building.
Well, he's not in your building yet.
That's what I'm saying. You know, he gets tested the next day. We got to get this, because this is crazy. Because if a team gets in trouble, they got to have a way to get guys into their building and up to speed before Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I think the benefit there is virtually you school him up. You get the position coach with him, and virtually you school him up on Zoom.
It won't be a position coach. It'll be like a quality control. Position coach is busy.
Right.
They're doing game planning and all that stuff. They don't have time to spend on this
guy.
You know what I'm saying?
But somebody's going to have to school him up virtually, you know, kind of like everybody's been learning throughout the course of the offseason, not being on the field. It's going to have to be that way. And that guy's going to basically report back to the coaching staff and just be like, yeah, he needs some practices before we can put him on the field. I don't know if he's got this down, you know, that kind of thing. So –
Maybe he can cover kicks.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Are going to be a lot of different scenarios that we have never seen before in terms of roster shuffling that is going to make this season fascinating.
It's really,
hopefully, in an interesting way, not in a catastrophic way.
It's going to be paramount.
Personnel departments are going to be tested like never before.
But I think it's going to be paramount that you use the guys in your building
as much as possible,
first. Now, certainly you can pick – if there's a guy or somebody you can get out and you don't have any real need for him but you want him, get him, take the time, get him in, get him acclimated, you know, just like normal. Acclimate him into your team as fast as you can and start using him. But for the most part, you go with what you got, man. You got to.
So in addition to our interview with Gabe Davis and Dane Jackson coming up at 1:30, we will also hear from John Brown, who was on a Zoom call with the local media. We ran out of time in yesterday's show to hear from him. We will get to him a little bit later in the program. We'll also get a couple of comments from Levi Wallace, who, as we know, is going to be embroiled in a position battle there at cornerback with Josh Norman and, who knows, maybe some others that might work their way into the mix for that starting right cornerback job opposite Tre'Davious White. So we'll hear from him probably in the 1 o'clock hour. But right now we are going to hear from Jerry Hughes, who, as we know now, is the longest tenured Bills defensive player, now entering his 8th season with the Bills, his 11th in the NFL. And Jerry is a player who has been at the forefront of voting initiatives and campaigns, and that has only been heightened by the recent events battling social injustice, systemic racism, and the like with the protests we've seen across the country. They're still raging in Portland, Oregon right now, maybe more than anywhere else, although there was some more activity in Chicago that bordered on riot-like stuff, unfortunately. You don't want to see it go that way, but Jerry has been very active on this front for years now. And it's kind of been spotlighted even more in light of the social injustice campaigns that people are undertaking nationwide. So here's Jerry on his efforts to kind of push forward the agenda with social injustice and voting.
Voting has always been important to me. We learned as kids from our parents, you know, how our great-grandparents, you know, fought and died for that opportunity for us to have that American liberty, that American freedom. So I make sure to make it a focal point to let people know the importance of voting, and not just for presidential terms, but for different primaries as well, especially for the House of Representatives and people who will be sitting on your state board as well. I think all that is important for people in my generation who haven't got that education or may have missed that piece of American history, where our voices do matter and how important it is for us to go out there. And if we truly want to make change, we have to vote. And I think that that's just really important.
Voter apathy, Steve, is maybe the worst thing.
It's hard to, you know, I think it's in this environment where everything's so polarizing and social media is it, and we have a, you know, leadership and incumbent political leaders, and also challenging from both sides of the aisle. Everybody uses social media.
Yeah.
So it kind of, in a backhanded kind of a way, everybody's kind of engaged. You can't escape it now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You get bombarded.
You get bombarded with it. So I think that in a backhanded way, I think people are more engaged now than I've ever seen them.
Yep. And, you know, people don't have a problem voicing their opinion on Twitter in a half a second. The strongest way to voice that opinion is by voting. So
go in there and pull the lever.
Instead of firing off a tweet, go vote.
Yeah.
You know, and Jerry is a big proponent of that. So
it's true.
I commend him for the efforts that he has undertaken, not only on the national level, as he said himself. Some of those local elections impact you
in a far greater way
than the national election does. So he's trying to, you know, push voting at every level of government. So good on him for doing that.
Yeah.
Now, more football related from Jerry is this new mentality that he claims that the defensive line room now has as far as rushing the passer, and he shed some light on that and where it's going, because he feels with the collection of guys they have in the room now, chiefly with the additions of Mario Addison, you know, Quentin Jefferson, Vernon Butler, those are the new guys on the scene, along with Harrison Phillips coming back to full health off the ACL. He is excited about what they feel they can put out on the field every given week.
A relentless attitude. I think that's key. And we have a lot of guys in our room who are passionate about the game of football, understand how to be a pro. So it's going to be a lot of fun being able to play with those guys, put on the pads, and actually go out there, pin our ears back, and hunt some quarterbacks. I mean, anywhere from Quentin or Big Q, as we call them, you know, that was a great pickup by Brandon Bean. Vernon, VT, B. Cox, Daryl, I mean, all those guys. Trent, we got so many talented guys on our D-line, and just watching everyone work and watching how we all been able to just mel and just click this offseason, even though we haven't really been with each other, has been huge. So I'm excited for all of us to get out on the field, because I know we're all going to be out there relentlessly hunting that quarterback, trying to make plays and just keep pushing each other. And I think when you have that level of competition in your room, it makes the year, it makes the room a lot really fun.
I mean, this is the part of the team that has undergone the most change from last season to this season, yeah. The defensive line. But it's encouraging to hear that from Jerry. He kind of feels like they're a pretty tight-knit group already, which is pretty remarkable when you consider the lack of time they've had just being face-to-face at a distance, of course, but just in the same general area or on the same field together. That hasn't happened until the last week or so.
Yeah, it really – there's no question there's every reason to believe there's – with the statistics they lost with the departure of Jordan Phillips and Shaq Lawson, that they more than made up with them with the statistics they included. You know, Quentin Jefferson, Mario Addison, and Vernon Butler. And then when you add in some fresh stuff, fresh legs like A.J. Epenesa, man, oh, man. They were in the top 10 sacks last year.
10th in sack percentage.
10th in sack percentage. And that was after starting out very slow when nobody was throwing the football against them, because, you know, the offense was struggling to score points and, you know, teams just really weren't up against the wall to have to air it out a little bit. Then when the offense started clicking a little better, when Josh, you know, stopped turning it over and went 12 TDs and two interceptions in that stretch, then they started rising through the ranks of sack percentage, because these teams had to start airing it out on them. And they came through when they got the opportunities. And I think they're even better this year.
Now, you touched on Mario Addison, who has four straight seasons of 9 sacks or more. It's just uncommon production, especially for a player who's a little bit longer in the tooth. But he said he feels young, and there is a connection between him and Jerry Hughes, because they were teammates back in Indianapolis in 2011 and 2012. And just to see the smile on Jerry's face, to have Mario back in the room with him, he was a kind of a guy that took Mario under his wing as an undrafted rookie, which is what Mario was. Jerry was a first-round draft choice. It's very clear there is a special relationship there, because Jerry's over the moon to have him on his roster with him and to be teammates with him again. So let's hear Jerry's thoughts on that.
Man, it's been exciting just to get him back in the room to kind of rekindle 2011 and 12 for us. Pretty much, it's been great. We've always joked around and said how fun it would be to actually play together, and it's crazy how things kind of work out. So I'm excited for him to get on the field and do what he does, just because I've been watching him throughout his entire career. I know how he can get back to the quarterback, make plays. You know, he's a playmaker who loves to be out there, and I think when you got someone on the line who's pushing you competitively, it's always a race to see who can get back there to the quarterback, and I think that's going to make our games and our practices and our different workouts so much more fun. So I think I'm excited to actually play with him, to have him up here with the Bills, because I know he's going to bring a lot to the table, and it's going to be a fun year.
That's an excited guy. Like, yeah. You know, Jerry loves playing this game, but I don't know if I've ever seen him smile this much in an interview. I mean, he was like – almost giddy for
it's,
him.
Now, I know. I get it. It's that time of year where everybody's excited. Everybody's optimistic. But Jerry, you can tell he's different than he has been in the last couple of years. He is really excited about what's going to happen with this defense, the guys in the room, the chemistry with the guys up front. And we've talked about it at length this offseason about the additions they've made and how good and deep this defensive front looks to be.
Jerry just kept using the word fun.
Yeah.
And I've never heard him say fun when he's talking about, you know, we're in training camp. This is a grind, right. You know, and it's not real training camp
sort of
yet.
Training
the pads
camp,
aren't
yeah.
on. I understand all that. But this is the time of year that a lot of vets don't really get too up for. And so to hear him speaking so positively about this team's prospects and the collection of talent that they have on the defensive line, I think is very telling. Veterans can get an early sense as to what the potential of a team is. And I know potential doesn't mean anything until you prove it on the field, but it's clear to me that he feels we really got something here. We put this, right. We keep doing this and put this together, we're going to be going places.
That's right. You always think that, but I think a lot of years, even the years that I played, there were years where you think, well, gosh, I hope this doesn't happen or this doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And this is a team that we knew has they have a great roster, a deep roster, an experienced roster. They've got youth on their side as well. They've got crucial players that are just coming into their prime. There's a lot of things to love about where the Buffalo Bills and the organization sit right now as far as the football end of it is concerned. And to have the players kind of jump on board with that, I think they can see it. I think guys like Jerry Hughes, who've been around for a while since 2011, have seen a different teams and how it goes for things and how seasons evolve and progress. There's a lot of things. I think teams, and I said this before, their morale is the highest when they're the most prepared. And when you're in training camp, you don't really, you know, there's no game plans or anything like that. But when you look around the roster and you're out on the practice field and you're looking around the room and around the field and looking at these guys, you're thinking,
we're stacked.
Wow, we got some guys. You know, everywhere you look, there's like, guys that you think, wow, he's good. And like, well, wow, so is he. And he, we don't have any holes.
Yeah.
You know, that's a fun place to be. And that's what I think that's what's reflected in Jerry Hughes' comments. You can just see how excited he is to get on the field and get this thing rolling. And hopefully they get a chance to do it.
When we come back, we'll have one more comment from Jerry, probably his most poignant comment, dealing with Ed Oliver's DUI arrest, which Ed addressed yesterday in a Zoom call with the media, where he essentially revealed that he was racially profiled by the police. And Jerry, who doesn't live that far away from Ed Oliver in the Houston area, reflected on that and gave his opinion on how things went down when Ed was stopped in that traffic stop late in the night bound in Montgomery County in Texas. So we'll get to that when we come back, and we'll check the tweet sheet as we're asking you which Bills rookie could be the biggest surprise in 2020 and why. All coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back on One Bills Live.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and we're listening in to some Bills players as they're made available to the media day by day, and we're trying to pass those along to you so you can hear from the players themselves. Heck, that's half of the reason you listen to this show. We try to be a conduit for you, the fans, to the players. And so we've been trying to facilitate that this week. We started it last week as players were back in town and working and available to the media. So we've been listening to Jerry Hughes in our last segment. We're going to wrap up with Jerry with perhaps his most poignant comment of his interview with the media yesterday, late yesterday. And it dealt with Ed Oliver's DUI arrest. Obviously, he was cleared of all charges, although it took a month for that to happen, even though he blew a zero on the breathalyzer and passed a five-minute field sobriety test, which is considerably longer than most field sobriety tests. Also had nothing in his system as revealed by a blood test, even had a tox screen, nothing there, and yet it took a month for the charges to be dropped. And essentially, Ed didn't say these words, but his description of what happened basically led everyone to the conclusion that he was racially profiled in Montgomery County in Texas by the police. So Jerry, who also makes his home in the Houston area, like Ed, was asked about the situation, how Jerry and his teammates initially reacted to the news. Because, Steve, if you remember, this happened on a Friday. Ed gets out of jail Saturday morning, has to fly to Buffalo for meetings, and it was meetings or was it OTAs? I can't remember. But he had to come to Buffalo. And so the team met in a distanced format. I can't remember the exact details of everything.
Right.
But they're all in a meeting together on Sunday, probably via Zoom. And they all saw the reports. And, you know, Ed's like, the way it was portrayed in the media, he's like, I felt like I was guilty before I was proven innocent, rather than innocent before proven guilty. So here was Jerry's memories of the situation as they unfolded and how he dealt with Ed on it after it happened.
It was tough just because I'm in that Houston area with Ed, so I was able to see it on the news and we were kind of able to discuss and talk about it a little bit more. And then oddly enough, I was actually in that area a week after Ed, just doing some different things where I was meeting a home developer out there. So I kind of got to be able to survey the land that or the surroundings in which he was in or involved in. And it's sad. It really is sad that we're still doing things like this in the year 2020. I shared a story with him about how, you know, growing up in Houston, we used to hear stories about certain guys who went to certain small towns in Houston and, you know, the horrific events that kind of happened and took place. And it really just became a word of mouth. Now we actually have cameras and things like that are able to kind of capture those stories so the world can really see what's truly taking place in this country. And so I feel bad for him. I feel bad that he has to go through something like this in the year 2020, but he seems like he's learned a lot from it. He's grown tremendously as a person. And I think that's one key thing that you got to be able to do with these different life lessons that are going to really fall up on us, is how you can grow and continue to move forward and not let it impact you negatively. So I think that's been really huge that I've really loved to see with him.
So, I mean, man, I mean, it's great that he grew from it, but that's really not a scenario that anybody should have to be put through in light of how those things unfolded. And here we are in 2020, this still happens. And Jerry can speak to it with firsthand knowledge. He's been through that area in Montgomery County, Texas, which is, you know, in the Houston area. He makes his home down there. And, you know, he said, I got a lay of the land and how things are in certain pockets of this country still. And it's clear that it didn't sit well with Jerry. And for Ed, I commend him for complying and doing everything the right way. But still, I think we can all come down on the side of the fence where we say, this guy shouldn't have been hauled off to jail.
Right.
He just should not.
Yeah.
You blow a zero. Let the guy go and have a good night. Get home safe. You know what I mean? And
wow.
It just didn't happen that way. The police officer, according to Ed, said, well, I know you blew a zero here, but you still look intoxicated, so we're taking you to jail. So it's just, I don't know. I'm not going to pretend to know what protocol is in those situations. I'm not in law enforcement, never have been. But, man, it just – the optics aren't great.
I lived in Texas for a minute. I played for the Oilers there in Houston.
Yeah.
And a lot was made out of the fact that Ed had a gun in the vehicle. And not for nothing, folks, I got news for you.
In Texas?
90% of the people in Texas got a weapon in their car. So that's like – If you rob a convenience store in Texas, you'll get shot by everybody in the place. That's a literal, the truth. It happened.
Okay. So that's just prevalent down there. So that's nothing. That was nothing. It sounds bad in a state like New York, where it's very highly regulated.
Right. There's a
lot of gun control laws up here. It is not that way down there. So that was also an added thing, and I'm sure that. Yeah. Well, whatever. So we've been over this, and there's just no getting around the fact that it was an injustice.
Right. So we'll leave that one there. We do want to get back to the Twitter question of the day on the poll, which is, at this point in time, who do you think, which Bills rookie has the greatest chance to be a surprise in 2020 and why? And among the choices are Gabe Davis, Tyler Bass, Isaiah Hodgins, or other. And right now, Tyler Bass is out in front by a small margin over Gabe Davis, and Steve gave his reason as to why he thinks that's so, because, you know, if he wins the kicking job, yeah, he's going to be the leading scorer on the team.
Right.
That's a big if, and we have to see how it all plays out. And again, creating clutch situations to prove that a rookie kicker can be clutch for you is going to be challenging for this coaching staff without any preseason games. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But on the tweet sheet, which is presented by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, Robert starts with, I chose other. I think with no preseason games, everybody could be a surprise. And I'm predicting it now. We're going to win the AFC East this year. Which is
wow, let's just start with a big swig of the Kool-Aid right there. Right?
Hey.
Right.
Been waiting a long time to say stuff like that. So I'm not blaming any Bills fan
that's
for
true.
Getting all giddy about it.
And it is it's fun to think about, and that's why I think here in Western New York, people are more invested than ever than trying to get the NFL season off the ground and making sure they play 16 games and things go off, because this is the team that really has a chance to do it. So in a lot of people's mind. From Jack, also on the tweet sheet, he says, Hodgins may be earmarked for practice squad, but the guy is a hard worker with great hands, excellent size, and was good in contested ball situations at Oregon State. He can battle Duke for that sixth wide receiver red zone threat. He's not as fast, but his draft bio reads like TJ Houshmandzadeh.
Championship!
So there you go. And I like it when you try and compare guys to former guys who have had some success. TJ Houshmandzadeh was a really productive guy.
I think he went to Oregon State too.
Yeah, he was.
Houshmandzadeh.
He did. And so it's just so fun. And the thing about it is, and we've said it a ton, it's so strange. We haven't even seen these guys yet.
I know.
I mean,
I know.
You know, Dan.
Like, usually you've got
Gabe Davis comes in, he's wearing number 13, right? I mean, it's like, I want to see that.
Yeah. It's definitely strange. I'm not going to debate that for a second, because usually by this point in time, Steve, we've got some working knowledge on what they're capable of, even though we've only seen them out of pads and we didn't really see them in real football because of the OTA practices and minicamp. Obviously, that's absent for us to chew on. So, you know, we're going into training camp as blind as we ever have.
Yep.
And it's going to make it challenging for us to make evaluations quickly and accurately. And I imagine the coaches are in a similar boat. I mean, yes, they've been around him a lot more with all the virtual meetings in the offseason, but in terms of on-field work, it's going to be a limited sample size here. Just going back to some of what Brandon Bean did say, though, about Isaiah Hodgins, and I agree with this 100%. I don't have a trained eye for watching film and assessing a player like those guys do, but I've seen enough football to know when a guy can pull off a double move. This guy never gets separation because he's quick in short areas. He does it by the way he sets up defensive backs. And double moves are this guy's bread and butter. I mean, he's got guys turning around like a corkscrew.
Right.
Like, their back is to him, and he's catching the football.
I've said it a ton. I played like a quarter of an inch of wide receiver in the NFL, but I practiced 6 days a week for 13 years playing, right? So I played with James Laughlin and Andre Reed and a lot of really good players. I went to the Pro Bowl as a special teams guy, but practiced all week as a wideout with those guys. I mean, I was around all the great ones, as far back as Steve Largent was at my first Pro Bowl. I mean, right? Think about it. So yeah. I was, you know, there were some guys, right?
Yeah.
So
When kids ask me and when I talk to kids about running routes, you don't talk about how fast you got to be or any of that. I talk about how patient you have to be. It's not about outrunning people when you're a wide receiver. I know you have to be fast and all that, but that's just kind of a ticket to the party. What it takes to get open in the NFL is the ability to fool the defender into thinking you're running one route when you're not running that route. That's what it takes, and it takes some patience. And some of the greatest routes you'll ever run, you try and walk yourself through it, and I've done it 100 times, like, man, oh, man, it must feel like it takes a half an hour to run that route.
Yeah.
And then when you come out, you stand there, you're on time, and you're standing by yourself because you just took that extra time and the defender thought you were running something else. It's a great feeling when it works,
yeah.
But it takes a great deal of patience to do it well. And younger guys like, you know, Isaiah Hodgins and Gabe David, these guys are learning it at lower levels. Now they're kind of polished, much more polished coming out than they used to be.
And it's funny because you hear the teachings for defensive backs, and it's almost the same thing. Be patient. You know, don't flip your hips too soon.
Right.
Don't give a tell, you know, because as soon as you flip those hips too soon, you know, because you're worried about getting beat deep, that's when the guy breaks the thing off and he's got 15 yards and a first down, which is better than a 60-yard touchdown. But still, it's almost like the same rules apply in terms of holding your water, being patient, stuff.
We could talk about this for another half hour. Because there's a lot of layers to it. But, yeah,
we do have to break. So we will step aside, but we'll continue with the tweet sheet. And coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, we'll be hearing from John Brown. And then down at the 1:30 mark, it's two rookies from the draft class, Gabe Davis and Dane Jackson. Steve and I will be talking with those two guys about a unique connection that they share from the college ranks. We'll get to that and more. It's all coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we are discussing rookies who could surprise for the Bills in 2020. I think the general consensus is that A.J. Epenesa and Zach Moss will make contributions in 2020 for this team this year. So those really wouldn't be much of a surprise. But who else from the rookie class may rise up and provide a little bit more production than maybe any of us are anticipating? 803-0550. 1-888-550-2550, the number to call if you want to chime in there, or hit us up on the tweet sheet. And, Steve, I think we're up to Seamus.
He says, I might say Gabe Davis or Tyler Bass, but I don't think that would be so much of a surprise. I expect them to be great, so my take is Isaiah Hodgins. In parenthetical aside, he says, which wouldn't be a huge surprise to me either.
Well, here's the thing.
Seamus is really high on our draft prospects.
And that's great. That's great. Here's the thing you have to remember, though. As encouraged as you might be by the skill set that Davis and Hodgins bring to the table, you have to remember there's a pecking order here now.
I know.
There is a pecking order here now. You realistically are keeping six receivers at the most. Okay? So let's just run down this thing real quick. Okay? Stephon Diggs, John Brown, Cole Beasley. That's set in stone.
That's three.
That's in stone.
Yes.
That is chiseled.
Then you essentially have three spots up for grabs between about eight guys. One of whom is Andre Roberts, who is the best return man on the roster.
Who's a Pro Bowl returner.
So conceivably.
Now you're down to four.
Four spots are taken. So now you're down to two spots for seven guys. And while I do anticipate Gabe Davis being very impressive, I mean, all returns on him have been through the roof, not only from what he does on the field, but for the way he's able to absorb and master schemes. I believe he had a couple of offensive coordinators in his time at UCF in college, and that helped him get used to adapting to new schemes and such. So you would say he's got a good shot, but have we forgotten that Robert Foster, Isaiah McKenzie, Duke Williams are on this roster also? Like, there's a deep pool there.
Yeah.
So as great as you might feel about what guys like Hodgins and Davis can do for this team, you have to remember the level of talent they're going up against here. This isn't a shoe-in I got a roster spot deal as far as I see it. Maybe less so for Davis. I mean, Hodgins is going to be making an uphill climb here, even though I loved the pick when they made it.
Right.
But it's going to be an uphill climb.
What's it going to be to surprise you? Making the roster is a surprise? I mean, I would be surprised if they actually, you know, the surprise might be how much they play. If they get, I mean, forget about having, you know, a 75-80 catch season for 900 or 1,000 yards.
Not this year.
That would be an enormous, that would be a shock.
That would be a shock. It'd be like an earthquake.
Getting on the field to play wide receiver a handful of plays in a month would be a surprise almost with those guys, right?
Yeah, it would. Because I got to believe that Hodgins is fighting an uphill battle to make this roster, and it's not because of anything he's not doing. He could do he could do his level best every single day and still not make the 53.
How good would he have to be to get on the opening day he's on the field starting?
I think
there'd have to be a car wreck with three guys in
just
it.
Just four guys on COVID.
Right.
Reserve list.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key for a guy like Hodgins is to demonstrate a level of consistency within the framework of the offense that is vastly superior to that of players who mimic his skill set, like a Duke Williams. You know, if you're out, you want to outperform that guy every day because your skill sets are somewhat similar. You're not blowing the doors off of anybody. You're not getting behind them with your speed. You're using craftiness and route running precision and, you know, your vision to find holes in the zones to make plays. And if you can do that with a greater consistency than guys with similar skill sets like Duke Williams, you're going to afford yourself a greater opportunity to make this roster. Because there is something to be said, Steve, and we can get into this on the other side. There is something to be said about having different kinds of receivers within your receiving core. You don't want all guys that just run, you know, nine routes all day long.
Right.
You need the craftiness underneath from a Cole Beasley. You need someone that can go up and catch a jump ball in the end zone. And, yeah, you need the guys that can blow people's doors off and make them, you know, get out of their backpedal sooner than they want to and make them uncomfortable. You know, you're up on you're up on that DB's toes in 2.5 seconds, and they're like, oh, God, I got to flip, or I'm going to get burned. You know, you need those guys too. So different strokes for different folks. You need different skill sets within your receiving core on your roster, and that may be what ultimately helps Hodgins the most.
Yeah, next on the tweet sheet from Bill's Mr. E, which is this is an interesting one. I kind of like it. He says, I think Dane Jackson could be a surprise to a lot of folks and wouldn't be surprised if he was the cornerback number two at year's end, meaning he was opposite Tre'Davious White. That's I like where his head's at. I like where Bill's Mr. E is at because this is a coaching staff that does that for players.
Oh, they don't care how long you've been in the league.
Right. And they develop guys. Ed Oliver's a perfect example throughout his rookie season. Other guys, the same thing. These guys get better and better and better week after week after week. Josh Allen has done it. Certainly Devin Singletary did it. Dawson Knox is there. This is a great coaching staff for developing young players. And if Dane Jackson shows that kind of development and has those kind of skills, you know, you put it out there and like all of a sudden they got another one that's like Tre'Davious White in the late rounds just because he's a guy from Pitt or whatever, but all of a sudden the guy turns into a really good player because he's been developed. That's a good one. That's a good surprise. That's a good call.
Hey, that's
by
what
him.
We're looking for from our listeners that's and our viewers on the tweet sheet, man.
He's not saying he's going to be surprised like from the get-go, but by the end of the year, he's going to be a different player than he was at the beginning, and I think that shows a lot of insights to
like
what happens to players.
Hey, I like when people go off the grid and make a different opinion, you know, develop a different opinion and have
it's a great
evidence
line of
to
thought.
Back it up or some reasoning to back it up. We take any and all on the tweet sheet. So we'll get to more of that. We'll also hear from John Brown, who had some comments about the offense, about some of these rookie receivers that we were just talking about, among other things. So we'll get to John Smoke Brown when we come back on the other side here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.